From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 519, the MongoDB exploit with guest Niall Merrigan. Recorded Friday, January 20th, 2017. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Niall Merrigan, an Irish guy who managed to end up in Norway after finding out countries existed when he was in New Zealand. He works for Capgemini in Stavanger, Norway, and is the head of the custom software development and has been a Microsoft ASP.NET MVP since 2010. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
We always see each other at conferences.
Yeah, we've always been kind of passing by in different countries. You're one of the people I kind of always meet at a different country, never in your hometown.
Right. And then, and me for you as well, although we do share a penchant for the brown liquors.
Yes, but we will try to keep that quiet.
Do the best we can.
Exactly.
It seems to me, I mean, whenever I see you speak, you're really focused on security issues at the development level.
Yes.
Which is an interesting business and an ongoing conversation. And this being an IT show, I think it's a challenge for most IT people just trying to get their handle around what the security context look like, especially in the wave of this latest round of exploits. Things have gone kind of mental for you, haven't they?
Yeah. About last 6 months ago, I was doing a talk actually at NDC in Oslo, and I did talk on different vulnerable devices that were online, mainly because due to either security misconfigurations, bad configs, user error.
Right.
And one of the things I highlighted was MongoDB.
Interesting.
And I pointed out that MongoDB has an opt-in security feature.
Oh, I see. So we're not talking about MongoDB as vulnerable per se. It's that the default is not a good default.
Yes, because if you run MongoDB, you start the daemon using mongod.exe, for example, on Windows.
Right.
And then you have to add a --auth tag to get authentication.
Right.
So instead of the whole thing being secure out of the box, it's unsecure, and then you have to tell it to be secure.
Right.
So what people were doing was we were using a tool called Shodan, which is a search engine for the Internet of Things. It's written by a guy called John Matherly out of Houston. And he had pointed out in a blog post in 2015 that there was close to one terabyte of data or something like that, or more of data sitting online in databases or Mongo databases just exposed. And that was a blog post, and he kind of pinged Mongo and said, listen, you should really kind of fix this, or owners fix this.
Right. And the point being, this is not Mongo doing this.
No.
Just their policy.
Yeah.
This sounds like back in the old days when people were putting SQL servers essentially online.
Yeah,
right?
That's the analogy I've been using. I said, like, this opt-in security concept is very much like the SA blank with SQL Server 2000.
Oh, man, right.
I don't know about you, but when I was consulting in late 90s, early 2000s, that, you know, you'd get into a system and they'd say, as a developer, say, I need you to connect to the database. And I'd say, let me guess, SA blank? and they'd go, yeah. And I was like, okay, guys, you really should fix that.
Yeah.
But we had done then, fast forward to like just before Christmas, 2016, and a guy named Victor Yevers, he's a researcher based out of the Netherlands, works with the GDI Foundation. Mm-hmm. He kind of pointed out that he spotted a couple of bit of vandalism on MongoDBs, and
Vandalism.
People were deleting databases.
Okay.
There was actually a database being on your, the data collection on your Mongo database or server saying, deleted because you didn't password protect your database server.
Okay.
Okay. So this was popping up.
So sort of vigilante vandalism.
Yeah, kind of, but more know, kind
be
of.
Be more secure.
Yeah, be more secure and ha ha ha, we dropped everything. And then I don't know what some penny somewhere dropped.
Right.
And
because this is now months. I mean, when did Victor do the initial, hey, there's a vulnerability here?
Victor did the initial vulnerability. He's been doing that for a while, but he kind of found the first vandalism back realistically, the first indication of compromise, IOC, in just after Christmas.
Okay. 2016.
2016. Then, typical, I'm at home, I'm sitting on Twitter, and I spot this. I'm like, oh yeah, that's kind of interesting. And it's related to the talk I do, so I'm thinking this could be kind of interesting to link up the next time I do this talk.
Right.
And then, I have a lot of Shodan foo. I kind of know my way around Shodan after doing so much work with it.
Sure.
I started pointing out all the different IOCs I found. And that is, you know, if you show interest in anything, and someone needs help, they will drag you into it.
Right.
So I ended up started helping Victor a lot in trying to track all the different IOCs, all the different actors in play, who was doing what. And we were watching how the code is spreading, who was trying to get the ransom, whatever.
So there are actually ransoms in this?
Yes. So what had happened, we found then, was a particular group called Hacker had started systematically going through Mongo database servers, saying that they extracted data from you and dropping all your collections and leaving one called with a generic title called Warning. And inside there was one document which had, please send Bitcoin, it said 0.1 or 0.2 Bitcoin to this particular address and then email us at this with your server IP to get your databases back.
Okay. So a ransomware.
Ransomware. In not in the traditional sense. They don't leave it on the disk. They just take it off the disk. However, we didn't find any evidence of them extracting the data.
Oh my. So they're lying.
They're lying. So we checked the logs. We checked that there's no exfil of data. We checked that they've only dropped collections and they put up the ransom note. So you get, we started seeing then people paying into the Bitcoin wallet.
Right.
And seeing like up to 22, 27, 67 transactions, etc. And we're like, okay, are you getting your data back? And people were like, no. Now people then were reaching out to Victor over Twitter and asking for help. And we had a victims tab, which was in the region of like 150 people. And like everything was production, sometimes staging, sometimes dev, but nearly all production. We had a column that said paid ransom. Did you get your data back? No. In every instance, we did not get the data back.
Holy man.
So what?
No honor amongst thieves.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And then what was making it worse? Someone else copped onto this, that this was a money-making scheme, and there was 65,000 databases to be ransomed. So they started literally checking the database, seeing if they had ransomed it before. If they didn't, dropped any existing databases and put in their own ransom note. So it would be like me coming up. You know the old cartoons where they're doing duck season, rabbit season, you know, in Bugs Bunny? It's like that.
Oh, okay? No. But in a horrible way.
Yes. So what we were finding was, all of a sudden, we started seeing 3, 4, 5 different copycats all trying to attack the same servers. I literally was on a server.
So you got like 4 ransom notes sitting on a server.
Not even one. They're just removing the other one. So you have to literally backdate yourself through your ransom notes to see who got you first.
And no evidence these people are actually
packing
the data.
Not evidence at all. Now, the worst part is I was sitting on a server doing the recon on it with the owner's permission. And I literally refreshed and the database had been dropped and the new ransom note had been posted. And I had screenshots of 2 minutes.
Right.
And I was there, oh boy, this is, and it was changing that fast. And
clearly no exfiltration of data there.
Because they wouldn't have been there. So, as you know, ransomware is a very vicious style of attack because we demand money from you for stuff that we've taken from you.
Right.
But strangely enough, the whole ransomware concept, it runs on trust.
Yeah. It does, that you actually can get a key, get your data back.
Exactly.
If you pay.
Exactly. In other words, that if you commit a monetary transaction, you will get your stuff
Everything
back.
Will be fine for you.
Yes. So the fact was that people are actually used to ransomware at this stage. We're literally paying ransoms and not getting their data back.
Right.
We were expecting some serious ransomware author to kind of come in and literally slap the kids around and say, stop screwing up my business model.
Right. Yeah, of course, because as soon as there's doubt that you would actually get your stuff back, why would you ever pay?
Exactly. So there's what happens. As soon as you introduce doubt as a concept into this scenario, people do not get paid.
Right.
And then you're now screwing with their revenue streams.
I mean, I kind of like that. I wouldn't mind if ransomware went out of business.
Yeah, I know.
I would prefer that we don't get exploited and these people are committing crimes.
Yes.
But the fact, you know, as soon as it's not profitable.
Yeah.
They'll stop.
Yeah. And this was the thing. We then spotted one player went, like, everyone was like, you know, 1,000, 2,000 IOCs on average because they were all playing off the same playlist.
Right.
They all had the same list of IPs from either Shodan, Zumai, or Census, or they'd done their own Mmap scans.
Right.
And then no one was kind of gaining ground. It was like, you know, like that old kind of games where you see people, as soon as you take a square, someone takes it off you.
Right.
So you can never gain.
It's the sort of red ocean mode. We're all fighting over the same thing.
Yes. And then all of a sudden, somebody wailed in with some serious firepower. And
so the talent arrived.
Yeah, but it was the same guys who had refined their first or second scripts. And I think they just went wider.
Okay.
So we've been trying working with different companies and trying to find out who it was, but we ended up watching.
Before this expansion, how many databases were we talking about here?
We were only talking about like 3,000 or 4,000 servers.
Okay.
All right. And that's where we were. And it was kind of escalating in a nice, simple slope. It wasn't spiking. It wasn't like a serious drop.
Right.
And our serious spike up. And then all of a sudden we went from 16,000 servers to 28,000 in the course of 4 hours.
Somebody got better at scanning.
Someone got better at scanning, or someone decided, I'll take a different block.
Right.
Then we started seeing localized attacks, specifically targeted against Brazilian servers. They were written in local language as well, and in Portuguese.
New code. This is not just script kiddying it.
They had used, normally everyone had like, please read, I have your databases, pwn because you didn't secure, silly, expletive. There was a lot of these type of things. But we started seeing then eventually a localized, particularly against German. For example, they took off an entire cluster that was a very targeted attack. We suspect if what happened there was someone went, oh, cool, a load of stuff's happening all over the world. They won't notice, and just went.
Went after the target they wanted to go after.
Yeah, and just took it out in a frenzy. You know, like when you have, you've got opportunistic looting like that. But they decided to take him out for, and we had a little incident where we noticed this, we found the IP, we tried to get to it, looked up the IP domain names and something.
Right.
And then made a mistake by one character and emails a customer or a guy going, dude, I think your databases have been like nuked.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the servers came back up. It was just due to some glitch in the internets. But it was a very panicked entrepreneur. There was a very panicked entrepreneur, like panicking, like, F5, okay, it's fine. And we're like, sorry, my bad.
I mean, it sounds like a relatively easy fix, though. You just have to go turn on off.
Turn on off and remove the default binding to all ports. It literally was listening on all ports rather than local. So,
right.
So what would happen is Mongo has this concept that if you don't bind it to the local host,
right,
it will listen on to all IPs coming in.
So you're not even trying to expose your Mongo database to the internet.
Yeah.
Because you went with the default, it's listening externally.
Yes. And then they changed that in like 3.2, I think, where it automatically defaults. But when we were looking at the version numbers, we were seeing like 2.6, which was released like 8 or 12 months ago. And then you had 3.2. Okay, that's maybe 2 or 3 months ago. So there were, you know yourself, how often do people update database servers or maintain?
If it's working, leave it alone.
Yeah. And that is actually like for, because you've got IT admins on this.
Yeah.
That is a common scenario. If you ask them, can we upgrade the database server like from SQL Server 2012 to 2016? And there's a little, don't know about that.
Yeah. Why?
Yes. Why?
Yeah. Tell me what you're going to get.
Yes.
Right? Because this is not, you know, there we're talking about a retail piece of software that's not inexpensive.
Yes, exactly.
There has to be a reason to take the risk.
Yes.
To do an upgrade.
Because there is some deprecation, something of, then you, and you have to understand that some.
It's just the testing overhead.
Exactly. And some people may have used something that's in 2012 that was fixed in 2016, for example.
Exactly. And it's not going to show up right away.
No.
You know, we're going to do the upgrade. And 3 months from now, when you have to do that reconciliation, it's like, oh, this doesn't work. Surprise.
So the problem then was, and this is a little bit kind of going back to my developer heritage. Mm-hmm. The code was written in C# that deployed all this.
What?
Yeah.
Hacking code written in C#.
Yeah. Now, so if your listeners are not familiar with this, the C# is not a standard issue hacking code. It's a Microsoft tool.
No.
Yeah. I know you know, but but once the ransom has started kind of escalating and there was literally less to pillage, Kraken, the Kraken group, Kraken Zero, they put out a note on Pastebin, said, we are selling our MongoDB scanning tool with 100,000 IPs. It's extremely fast, written in C#. And that flagged for me.
Because normally these are Linux people.
Yeah. This would be written in Python or like Go or something, or some other language that would run on a Linux. So jokingly, we thought if it was written in .NET Core, it was probably limited to a very specific set of people in the world who happened to be at NDC. But the thing was, it was the first time I've ever seen that kind of code being shipped out. Because it would have a very serious fingerprint as well.
Yeah.
And things.
I mean, I presume it's not a strongly signed assembly or anything.
I hope not, because
that would be really dumb. But it does speak to a totally different group of people.
Yes. And it also kind of explained why we saw a not consolidated effort. It wasn't one group. It was everyone trying to figure it out. And then we saw evolution.
Right.
We saw
this exploit.
We saw different changes. We saw as they kind of figured out where someone literally pressed F5, went, oh crap. Canceled out the thread and then started again, and it was a little bit minor variation and whatever.
Really,
and then what happened was, because if you'd go on a Shodan, you see all the different other data services and data stores that are exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Elasticsearch became next.
Oh no.
So Elasticsearch started getting pwned. Very similar, same concept. People started taking all the logging off of Elastic. Again, Elastic logs would have been quite big.
Right.
No one was exfilling data. putting out this thing.
But same thing, Elasticsearch by default, with the default installation, has security turned off.
No. Elastic would have had this by default from version 5, and but a lot of people would have stood this up and just not realized.
Right.
And then went, ah, nuts. Now, I don't know, a lot of people would have, on Elasticsearch, would have logging systems. So there might be like PII, personal identifiable information. And there could be a lot of compromised stuff in there that you may not want to have going in the wild.
Sure.
So the scenario was happening that two people paid for to get their logs back, didn't get their logs back.
Elasticsearch did.
But if you had actually exfilled the data, as a business model, you might have actually said, okay, someone's paid for this. They might actually, there might be something we can sell.
Right. It's resellable. Now,
Brian Krebs did this thing right before this started, where he says, if it's connected to the internet, someone will try and hack it.
Sure.
And then went, okay, if it's, even if it's not valuable, it's valuable to you.
Right.
So we can sell it back to you.
Yes, at the minimum, hence the ransomware
model. Yeah, and the ransom wasn't big. It was only like 0.2 Bitcoin, which is $400, I think.
Something like that.
It's still it's 200, 300 bucks, I think. Right. But it was still wasn't crazy money. Now we're starting, we've just seen Hadoop, and now Couch is going. So they're going after everything.
So suddenly we've hit this tipping point where it's like, hey, we have a new area.
Yeah.
And it's all these data stores that have just not had the same level of sophisticated security checking.
Yes, or they've – and what I'm kind of going back to with my concept of why it happened like this. Mm-hmm. So dev team comes along. I think you and I discussed this. Dev team comes along. They want to do a nice, simple system.
Right.
They want to make it look good, but they don't want to worry about data stores.
Sure.
So they stand up a MongoDB instance.
Quick, simple.
Yeah, because we know Azure, click, click, done. Or Amazon, click, click, done.
Yes.
Whatever. And it's like, I've now got a database. Mm-hmm. And I connect to the database here, and then I store my data, and I don't have to worry about schemas. I don't have to worry about any of the other stuff. It just works.
Right.
I can do a document.find.
But you're just building a prototype, right? As you do.
Yes, as we do. Or even you might be building a staging or even a production system.
Right.
But they stand this up, they make it work, and it works. And then they go, don't touch it.
Yeah.
It now
ship
works.
It.
Ship it. It now works. And a lot of these come out of shadow IT organizations.
Sure.
You know, the under the desk, some dev has kind of like gone and just done
solving a problem.
Created a prototype. Yeah. Oh my God, we'll use that now as a business system.
Right.
And we got comments like, you know, did anyone not have backups? I'm saying, if you don't understand how to secure your database, I don't think they're going to understand backups.
Right. Well, this is one of the things you saw with this wave of new lightweight data stores is that they didn't go through the, and, you know, asset evaluations, what's the backup strategy, what's an incremental backup strategy, what's the recovery strategy look like? Like all of those things that make it a real data store.
Well, this is the thing. What I find is like, you know, you mentioned the backup and recovery. Mm-hmm. As we say, the backup always works. It's the recovery that fails.
Yeah. Duh. Backup's easy. Backup always makes happy noises.
But that's exactly it, because it keeps working and goes 100% green. But hopefully going to be the changing point is that software developers, data store developers and whatever will start looking at opt-out security rather than opt-in. And I hope that happens.
I mean, it's kind of silly to think, because Microsoft's already gone through this.
This is,
you know, we now trust Microsoft around the security that security is on by default because they went through, I mean.
A massive, this is the thing. I think
Slammer.
And Code Red,
Code
Blaster.
Red. Yeah.
Like, wasn't it you that said to me that Bill Gates wrote a paper about like.
Right. That was that turning point, right?
Yeah.
That was XP-SP2.
Right.
But it was just this point where he wrote this paper that said, security is our priority now. Stop what you're doing.
And fix it.
And every product has to go through a security review, and where it's an issue, address it immediately. And that was XP-SP2. That was fixing up SQL Server. That's when SA, no password, died. Mm. Like all of those things started going away because of this initiative. And they got so serious about responding to zero days, being publicly visible around around exploits. Literally, that's almost 20 years ago now. Or
well,
I
remember when SP2 was launched and the uproar of people, I'm not installing SP2. It breaks.
It was a breaking change.
It breaks how I work.
Right.
And I was thinking, this isn't a breaking change. This is just making stuff work. Because, you know, the Linux world always had root as an isolated user. You had to sudo in or you had to use su to get into, do administrative tasks. And except Windows didn't have that concept. And then, of course, UAC popped in eventually.
Right.
In Vista. Was it Vista was UAC first?
Yeah.
or the first version, real kind of version of you, is he? So this is the thing. Microsoft in, like, since the, 2001, 2002 have gone through that whole very difficult phase.
Right.
Of fixing and going secure by default.
Yeah. Security's not an option.
Yeah.
You know, you can go through and turn it off, but you have to intentionally turn it off.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And it's how I think that a lot of these systems should be developed and designed.
This only matters because Mongo's gotten popular enough now that people are really using it.
Yeah.
And suddenly they have a responsibility to protect people's data, or at least to help lead them down the pit of success. How's that, right?
You fall into the pit of success.
Exactly.
But the scenarios I see now is that we'll start seeing maybe RIAC getting owned. Memcached people might really start looking at that as well.
Now these thieves have tripped onto, there's a whole marketplace here of potential exploits.
And now it's a gold rush. Yeah. They're trying to get there first.
It's not about encrypting your documents the old school ransomware way.
No.
Now it's going directly to exposed databases.
Well, and this is the thing. As one of my talks, I pointed out, I said, I found a dev system and I could connect to the database behind the scenes. And it was like, I could pwn your front end, but why bother when you're literally your data store sitting there going, hi.
Hi. Yeah. Yes, please.
Yes, please. I'll talk to you. No problem.
Query. This isn't an architectural problem. Like you are built your software the right way. You just didn't realize your data store was exposed to the internet.
And this is where, like, you know, we would normally have a little bit of oversight from sysadmins, security admins, or database admins.
You would hope
if the company's big enough.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in some cases it's not.
Right.
But, you know, normally I think,
well, all those guys are one person and he hasn't had any experience in this.
Yes. And you and I, we've worked in this business a while. So mm-hmm. we're used to things of, like, when we see something, we go, that just doesn't smell right.
Yeah.
What's going on here? Why?
Yeah.
We ask the question why a lot more than are you sure? It's more like, yeah, why you should be doing this. And I think that we will see this, hopefully this trend due to this problem in 2017, it literally disappear because people will realize that this is a problem.
It's time for a security audit.
Yes.
To go through your system.
Or just like, and if your listeners are interested, what you can do is you can literally put your IP into Shodan. It'll show you what it knows about your system from there.
Nice.
So it doesn't cost anything. You can do that as a free query.
I'll include a link in the show notes here. Just download Shodan. Like,
or go to the website, shodan.io, and then just literally put in your IP address.
Right.
And it'll show you, this is what it knows about your internet exposed system. So if you've got like SSH turned on, it'll show you the SSH kind of banner or key or whatever it found.
Sure.
If you've VNC, God help you, which I've shown. But like, for example, anything like that. And it really does make a difference because you may not realize how much.
Exposed.
Yeah. Because we've done it before.
Sure. All
stuff gets turned on just because, and then never gets turned off.
Right. We were just doing some testing, and it never gets switched off.
Yeah, because we're afraid it'll break something.
This is Troy Hunt's old line about hack yourself first.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Just take the tools that anybody can have access to and see what you look like to somebody on the outside.
It literally is a case of look yourself in the mirror and find out, oh, really? Did I forget pants?
Yeah. You know, the funny part will be, like, you're going to see a VNC port open. You're like, why? Why is that open? Who opened that? And now it's actually hard to find.
Yeah, because there probably won't be a change request. There probably won't be some ITIL process that wasn't followed. It'll have been circumvented somewhere and it'll have just been done by somebody, and you're just trying to figure out who that body is.
Right. And it's probably you.
Yeah. And then and because you were tired or you were under pressure or some boss was literally sitting on your shoulder saying, I need this.
Yeah. Get this working right now. And this was the quickest way to get it working.
Yeah. And you're left with technical debt.
Sure. You're right. That is IT technical debt. That's exactly what it is.
I'm hoping, and we've been kind of publicizing this. We've been talking to the vendors. The vendors have been quite interested in reacting back. Couchbase were very proactive because I have a friend of mine who works there, and I just pinged her and said, listen, are you guys aware of anything happening? And she goes, she panics every time I do that to her. I was like, no, I don't think you're under fire, but it is a case of be proactive.
This is a good time.
Yeah. Tell your customers how to do this. Advisories are very handy. Get them out ahead of schedule.
Right.
Because it's very often security is reactive.
Yes. Well, and there's nothing wrong with a little due diligence.
So yeah.
Given the current climate, knowing that there's a group of people out there looking for exploits is a great time for you to review these products.
Yeah.
And as a product creator, like a Couchbase, and say, this is where you would look.
Yeah. Right. And this, and here's a very simple checklist you can follow.
Sure.
And here's what you'll probably have to do to enable it. And off they go. And they were very proactive. We had a good chat with, Elastic. Their CTO and CEO were very proactive towards us.
Cool.
And so were Mongo. It's like, we're not trying out there, like the group of us who are trying to track all this and notify and help.
Mm-hmm.
We're not trying to screw companies.
It's not about blame.
No.
This is about,
we're literally trying
people.
To make sure you don't get caught.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not, that it's not a blame game because that doesn't help.
No, and there's excuses everywhere.
Yeah.
The only thing that actually matters is don't let this be a productive exercise.
Yes.
Let's make sure we shut these thieves down.
Yeah.
Because we can.
Yeah.
You know, the best part is when the product companies themselves can come along and say, you know, here are the best practices, what you should be doing. Maybe even building a tool so they can actually analyze all of their instances.
Microsoft do that with they did it for something, Windows hardening tools and stuff.
Security threat assessments.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. And these are types of things that you may not be aware of. And they're very simple to run as a little checklist. And it also gives you a little bit of peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
I did that. Now it should be fine. And here's how I can check it.
Sure.
You know,
it's a good set of practices in rocket science.
Yeah.
So for the most part, the word is out.
To
start dealing with this. I got to think from an IT perspective because often these NoSQL things are under our radar.
Yeah, and that's the problem. I used to make a joke, NoSQL, no query, no data.
But what can the world see of you is a really compelling thought. You might find there's a Mongo system somewhere in your organization you just weren't aware of.
And it's hitting, it's plugged in some patch panel wrong, which is now being routed out to the web, or it's in the wrong zone.
And it had the default all port allocation done to it.
And it works because, in the Windows environment, we had this whole concept that with IIS, developers would write code and then start using Windows authentication.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd try and publish the web server and it would break.
Right.
Because of double hop authentication problems. So as a security consultant, I would go in and I'd see on IIS, you'd have a computer name added as a user from the remote web server, which means it would guarantee that it would work because they didn't understand how to set up Kerberos.
Right.
And that was also one of the problems with, was it Elastic, that if you enable secure mode, you had to deal with Kerberos, and a lot of people don't know how to do that.
It's not trivial.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. On the Windows environment, it's hard, but like even worse, people were just saying, okay, I just want to take the happy path.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunately, the happy path is not a very long
path.
Is
it an insecure path?
Yeah, it's a not very long path because it'll hurt very, very quickly.
We haven't really talked about Hadoop so far in this thing because most people, I think, look at Hadoop as I take existing data stores and pass them to Hadoop to do analysis.
Yeah.
So.
And Hadoop is, we saw a lot of vandalism on Hadoop.
Really?
It would be coming up, no data for you because something, something sweary.
Right. Well, you hope they have an alternative data source for all of those Hadoop instances.
Well, strange enough, you know, you can go into, if you find the web front end for Hadoop, it has a thing called browse file system.
Oh my.
As root, a lot of the time.
Of course.
And you can just literally, and it's a nice little web UI. It's like, it looks like FTP. You just tick, 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 and you find everything. And inside, you eventually get into some logs and you can download them. You can find the shadow file. And it's.
Didn't even know it was exposed.
Yes. That's a lot of the cases. Or they're working on the concept that, you know what? There's 4 billion IP addresses in the world. How long will it actually take to find me?
Yeah.
And I've said 2.5 minutes on 10 gigabit switches, mate.
Yeah, not that long.
Because this was something I said, you know, so say you're standing up a new Azure instance, a new VM, and you have a public IP and you start the box. You have 2.5 minutes to patch it.
Right.
Before someone has scanned it.
Yeah. Somebody's poked at it, figured out what vulnerabilities you haven't covered up yet.
Yep. So if you take a very old VM or something like this is where if you're doing a lift and shift to the cloud, you're virtualizing and you're uploading like a 2003, 2008 server and it's not patched to the high heavens and it's going public. You're in for world of hurt coming up.
It's not going to be long.
Yeah, because that's the thing. So if you're doing this type of thing, make sure it's inside and behind it, like the VPN or the inside and hyperroot or something so that you make sure that it's only you that's seeing it, and that's it.
That's cool. Yeah. Hey, Niall Marrigan, random show, but definitely something important. I hope that folks take it to heart and
hopefully
go take a look at their systems.
Yes, do take a look. Do look at yourself in the mirror. Make sure. Do a quick check.
Yeah, you know? Not hard to fix yourself up.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.